Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, and now the last in our series on Best Documentary Oscar nominees. David France is with us. He's the director of How to Survive a Plague, which is the story of the early days of the AIDS epidemic and ACT UP, the grassroots organization in New York, of course, that in the 80s and 90s advocated for treatments for HIV, among other things. David France, welcome back to WNYC, and congratulations on the nomination.
Thank you. How cool is that?
And it is, I'm sure, never having had the experience, that it is totally cool to be nominated for an Oscar. And it's a really moving film for anyone in New York in the 80s and 90s. You folks will remember the rallying cry, ACT UP, fight back, fight AIDS. And the footage in this film will be familiar, a lot of it. You have footage of early demonstrations, early ACT UP meetings in Greenwich Village, plus private home video footage of some of the key activists, which really makes this uniquely personal. Right. And before we play some clips, for those who don't know, how do you look back on ACT UP's original mission and who the people were?
Well, you know, ACT UP began in 1987, and that was already 6 years into the plague in New York, and already tens of thousands had gotten sick and died. And they began with a great and roiling rage. And we remember that from the first year or two, that it was really a protest movement. It was really saying, stop doing what you're doing, start doing what you need to be doing. And then ultimately, the strategy refined, and they began to, in their confrontations and encounters with the officials and scientists, be very specific about what they wanted done, what they wanted researched, how they wanted those things researched, how they wanted them regulated and ultimately released. So the story of AIDS activism is really one of a forced and ultimately very productive partnership with researchers that helped bring about the drug breakthroughs in 96 that ended the plague years and made it finally possible to survive an HIV infection.
You do a really good job of showing how the strategy took shape. They realized early on that they needed to learn the science. Mm-hmm. They enlisted a couple of key scientists and doctors to help them understand how to bring a drug to market, how to research illness, and this became the treatment and data team of ACT UP, which is really central to the film. And I want to play a clip of Mark Harrington, one of the key activists on the treatment and data team. This is after they had won a victory at the National Institutes of Health headquarters in Bethesda, the approval of a drug that they wanted for treatment.
It was really an amazing encounter, but it sort of felt like reaching the Wizard of Oz. Like, you got to the center of the whole system, and there's just this schmuck behind a curtain. There was no guiding agenda. There was no leadership. There was no global strategy for how to deal with AIDS in the U.S. And so on the bus back from Bethesda, we decided to write a treatment agenda because nobody was dealing with the entire map of AIDS, the entire constellation of opportunistic infections, the gaps in research, the underrepresented populations, the fact that the diseases and the drugs might be different in those populations. How would we ever find out? They weren't even being studied.
Mark Harrington from How to Survive a Plague. And this is one of the turning points, and director David France is with us, one of the many moments in the film when you realize how hard this fight was and that lesser men and women might not have persevered. And you realize that these people were fighting for the whole community, but they were also fighting for their lives.
For their own lives, absolutely.
How did ACT UP change after they drafted this treatment agenda?
The clip that you just played is from a juncture in activism where they finally get through the doors and they see on the other side of the doors what they took initially to be the enemy. And then they realize that they were just human beings trying to do the right thing, but without a game plan and without leadership. And so they began at that moment to forge this partnership. They presented the treatment agenda that he described at the International AIDS Conference in Montreal, first time they went in and actually spoke directly to the scientists who were doing the bench work in the laboratories. And it was a clash of cultures. You see it in the film, which is pieced together with all this kind of vintage footage. You see that they're, you know, downtown New York, gay men with pierced ears and black army boots, arriving in the middle of this very Tweedy establishment.
Science conference.
Scientists, yeah. Right. And they make this presentation, and people are really afraid of them. And one scientist, and we see this in the film, one scientist from the NIH is intrigued but scared. So she sneaks around and tries to get a copy of this treatment agenda without actually engaging this alien body. and she starts to read it, and her first thought is, oh, they're wrong. They're just, you know, what do they think they're doing? And the deeper she gets into the agenda, the more she realizes that that she really didn't know about the lack of, you know, a certain kind of humane aspects to research. And she started as a biostatistician to think they had something that they could contribute. Mm. And she was the first person to invite them in, a small group, into her AIDS statistical working group at the NIH. And that began those were the first kind of baby steps of this partnership, this real working together.
It's a great moment. Listeners, call us up. If you were part of ACT UP or just around in those days, central to or on the periphery of the AIDS epidemic in New York or anywhere, 212-433-WNYC. Or if you've already seen the movie, How to Survive a Plague, and you want to talk to director David France, 212-433-9692, as we have spoken to the directors of all five Best Documentary Oscar nominees over the last five shows. And this wraps it up with this one, which is so close to home here in New York. Mm-hmm. Call up if you want to chime in, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Another clip. There was a rift that developed within ACT UP. Many thought that the treatment and data team were getting too close to pharmaceutical companies. I remember having this conversation back then,
right,
with doctors who had practices in Chelsea, you know, and were treating people with AIDS, and certainly supported the larger agenda of ACT UP and patient participation in politics and science, but were also concerned that an activist group was getting too close to pharmaceutical companies that had their own agendas and reasons for wanting to push, right, drugs through to approval very quickly, safe or not. And they were becoming, allegedly, this wing of ACT UP, this elite group. So this is a clip from an ACT UP meeting in 1989 in the film. I think this is 1991, but you'll tell me, where everyone was fighting. And the speaker is AIDS activist icon Larry Kramer, breaking through the noise.
Plague! We are in the middle of a f***ing plague! And you behave like this! Plague! 40 million infected people is a f***ing plague! We are in the worst shape we have ever, ever, ever been in. All those pills we're shoveling down our throats? Forget it. ACT UP has been taken over by a lunatic fringe. They can't get together. Nobody agrees with anything. All we can do is field a couple of hundred people at a demonstration. That's not going to make anybody pay attention. Not until we get millions out there. We can't do that. All we do is pick at each other and yell at each other. And I say to you in year 10, the same thing I said to you in 1981 when there were 41 cases. Until we get our acts together, all of us, we are as good as dead.
Larry Kramer from the early 90s, from the documentary How to Survive a Plague. And David, at this point, TAG, the Treatment Action Group, actually splits off from the rest of ACT UP?
It does. You were right to point out that that conflict and the suspicions that started to develop when this strategy that ACT UP ultimately improvised of having an inside wing and an outside wing started looking at one another as kind of as too extreme, either too extremely inside and potentially co-opted by the authorities, or too outside and too much in street protest and chaining themselves to things. And there came a proposal that really underscored this distrust. And it was a proposal on the floor of ACT UP that they adopt a moratorium of working with government officials and pharmaceutical officials for a six-month period. Mm. And that although the motion didn't pass, it was the event that cleaved the organization in two. And the inside strategy wing spun off and became the Treatment Action Group, still around today and more of a think tank. And it's certainly a group that sees the benefit of working as self-trained kind of science experts in this area with the scientists who are identifying new compounds and approaches.
And did it all become moot because then science got lucky, or I don't know if lucky doesn't give them enough credit, on the research front and the protease inhibitors came in?
Well, these folks from the Treatment and Data Committee, later TAG, were working very closely with the scientists who are identifying protease as a possible target for an anti-HIV drug, and helped in the early research. Ultimately, it was the Treatment Action Group, and in fact, one Spencer Cox, one of the members of the group, who designed the drug trial protocol that was adopted by industry when the protease inhibitors came online, so that we could get broad and reliable information very quickly about the drug and. So this interaction was really essential in that moment that helped bring those drugs to market so quickly in 96, and that ultimately, you know, emptied the hospitals. There was an 80% drop in death rates over the next 18 or 24 months. And so that was really effective. But that organization has kept working on new compounds, on new approaches, and ACT UP and TAG on both sides of that divide helped spawn the treatment action campaigns that took hold thereafter in Africa and part of the developing world that kind of exported this idea that patients should have a voice in the research and access issues around the disease.
David France, director of How to Survive a Plague, Best Documentary, nominee 212-433, WNYC, Michael in Clifton. You're on the air. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I just wanted to say how much I love the movie, and it parallels my story as well. I was diagnosed HIV in 1988, and although my health remained very good until 95, where my T cells dropped dramatically, there was very little hope for anyone at that point, right. And it was a matter of, you know, watching your health deteriorate. And in 96, when the protease inhibitors came on the market, that was the first time that there was hope, and here it is many years later, and my health is excellent. And the
Fantastic.
Movie, I thought, really exemplified the experience of so many gay men in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, thank you.
Michael, thank you. Thank you. Good to hear you sounding so good.
Absolutely.
Deanna in Hicksville, you're on WNYC. Hello, Deanna.
Hi. I just wanted to thank David for reminding people what this is all about. I lost my uncle in just past New Year's in 1992, so he was sort of the first wave in watching this movie and watching these people and sort of putting my own personal timeline along with theirs was such a moving experience. And I'm so grateful that even though I watched most of the movie with my hand in my mouth to keep from sobbing, to remind New York City and remind people, you know, all over the country who really, I don't think, see AIDS the same way anymore, because luckily we've come up with so many new treatments and new ways to fight it, but just remind them that it's there.
Absolutely.
And that it's taken so much already. And it was just, man, I hope you win that Oscar so much. Nobody deserves it more.
I hope you have
so
clout.
Much.
I hope that works.
Deanna, thank you so much.
Now, as I've always said about this film, that if you think you know the history of AIDS, and most people do, that this film will surprise you, that it's really a story about a community of kind of real heroes coming together on all sides, including the scientists, including the regulators, finding that and harnessing their heroic powers to make this thing happen when it would not ordinarily have happened. 8 million people alive today on those drugs.
And beyond being a good history of this particular movement, the film provides a good education about how to build a successful movement, period.
Right.
Was that one of your goals?
Well, it certainly was something that I discovered as I was doing the research to produce the documentary, that in fact it was a new paradigm for kind of grassroots social movements. hugely successful and innovative and, you know, triumphant ultimately, but that as a simply as a model, it offers a blueprint for so many other movements and in fact is being very consciously replicated in places like Moscow, where the pro-democracy movement is looking to the history of ACT UP and in fact staging underground screenings of How to Survive a Plague as a way to try to improvise their own strategies in their own demonstrations.
And what about right here with the Occupy movement and the marriage equality movement? You were making and promoting this film while both were extremely active.
Absolutely.
Do you think they have learned from ACT UP success? Did you see ACT UP reflected in either of those movements recently?
Of course. And in fact, in both of them, the Occupy Wall Street movement, I found even interesting in the way the media handled them, that you know, the media didn't treat ACT UP well. It considered ACT UP a group of troublemakers who were just screaming and just trying to disrupt ordinary life because they had nothing else to do to try to express their grief, and they were roundly dismissed throughout their heyday in the 80s and 90s. And we saw that happen with the Occupy movement in the early stages, where they were, you know, cast as you know, this kind of shirtless encampment of kind of proto hippies. And but the other thing we learned, and it's parallel, is that the first year or two of ACT UP really didn't get traction. It didn't get the kind of traction it needed to get, much like the early stages of Occupy. And it wasn't except for the perseverance that they really were able to show, that they were able to make those kind of inroads that they needed to make.
You talk about the media portraying ACT UP in the early days as troublemakers, but they were also out to be troublemakers. And I wonder if you think that angering people was useful, or if you look back on that as you made this film and decided that they didn't need to anger people staging something in the middle of St. Patrick's Cathedral, mm-hmm. or some of the other things that they did that got a lot of press, but negative press, because
right.
they really enraged people. They didn't just say, hey, folks, take our epidemic seriously.
Exactly. They did both of those things, right? So the first thing that they had to do as activists was to speak somehow over the heads of officials and through the media to the American people to say, look, you know, we are just sick people who want pills, but in order to get those pills, they had to fight all those other institutions, including the Catholic Church. And the point in demonstrations at the church was that the church was making an argument about condoms that was untenable scientifically and in public health measures, and they wanted to bring the argument right to the cardinal in New York, and they did get press on that issue. They unfortunately also got press on their apparent willingness to cross over any line to get their point across. And people like Larry Kramer say that in fact was a key victory for them, to make people afraid of them. That fear was part of the arsenal that they were using in their struggle. And you see how the fear worked in Big Pharma when they were confronting them about the way that they were researching or not researching drugs. But it was always a stick with a carrot. And that was the inside wing, was the group saying, look, we're mad at you for not doing it, but if you do it, we can help you through the FDA process in record time. We can start building profits for you if you develop drugs that are even partially effective in the marketplace.
All right. One more clip. This is Peter Saley, who was one of the lead activists in ACT UP.
And we have to leave a legacy to the generations of people who will come after us. Remember that someday the AIDS crisis will be over. And when that day has come and gone, there will be a people alive on this earth, gay people and straight people, black people and white people, men and women, who will hear the story that once there was a terrible disease and that a brave group of people stood up and fought and in some cases died so that others might live and be free.
Peter Saley from the Best Documentary nominated film at the Oscars, How to Survive a Plague. David France, the director, has been with us. I think it's between you and Invisible War. We'll see what happens on a week from Sunday night. What will you say on stage if you win, and who would be going up there with you?
Oh, it's hard even to think forward like that, and I do worry about jinxing things. So I haven't written anything. I know that just the opportunity to have the film even mentioned there brings, you know, the issue of AIDS back to an incredibly broad audience. A billion people will hear that there are still people out there concerned about this disease, and that would be fantastic. And I'll certainly go up with my producer, Howard Gertler, without whom this couldn't have happened, but also with Peter Staley, who you just listened to, and with Joy Thompson, our executive producer. And we'll go up there if we're given the chance, and we'll remind the world that, just as Peter was saying, once there was a brave group of people who stood up and fought so that we could all survive this disease or potentially have that available to us.
The DVD release is February 26th, by the way. You can see it on Netflix, iTunes. I noticed that on my cable system, it's available as a pay-per-view film.
It is.
So, David France, good luck and thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, journalist Charlie LaDuff. He's going to compare New York and Detroit a little bit. He used to work for the New York Times. He's now with a TV station in Detroit and has a book that is kind of about how not to run a city's economy called Detroit, an American Autopsy. Stay with us.